This is Who Kicked the Corner Flag, an English soccer game show podcast. And here's your host, James Rose.
It's that time of the week again, folks. The time where two rival Premier League fans break bread over soccer knowledge and quiz out the weekend's happenings. My first usual suspect is the leader of the KC Spurs fan group and the man who's decided to restart the always popular Spurs book club therapy sessions. Get reading. It's Jerry Bustamante. How are you, bud?
Our latest selection is Life Sucks.
Who's it by?
And there's nothing you can do about it. It is a wonderful non-fiction tale of nihilist existence and written by an up-and-coming author, Jared Bustamante.
Kickstarter that one. No, I was reading a book called How to Stay Healthy by none of the Spurs players, so that's going to be a good read to look forward to. More on that later. And his opponent is the leader of the KC Gooners and the man who's now excited for Wednesday's fixture against City. Intriguing. It's Boyce Richardson. How are you, bud?
You know, I'm only going to be good on Wednesday in the event that Pep Guardiola just selects Nicolas Otamendi about 11 times. And even then, I'm not necessarily sure that Arsenal have much of a chance. Between that and building a new house, I think I'm just retiring for the rest of 2020.
Let's go ahead and jump into Question of the Match, the contest where each person gets a statistical question from the most significant fixtures of the weekend. Jared will get the two topics from this category this week, and Boyce will get the extra rumor mill to follow. It's 2 points for a correct guess, and here are those categories. Manchester is red. Chelsea score 4. Liverpool limp over the line. All right, Jared, go ahead and pick one of those topics for us.
Let's talk about the Manchester Derby. That was fun.
Yeah, ooh, indeed, yeah. United complete the double over Man City by taking a second victory this season. The final score here was 2-0. Okay, Jared, here's your quiz question. When was the last time United did the double over City? Was it 2013 to 2014 or 2009 to 2010?
Ooh. 9 and 10.
Yes, sir, it was. That'll get you your first 2 points of the game. Believe it or not, it was still when Sir Alex was at the helm. Good old Sir Alex Ferguson.
I feel like that was it. It was stuck in the back of my mind. They hadn't done it since Sir Alex was there.
It's been a while. So let's start talking about City here, because somewhat, I say, uncharacteristic maybe for them, but what's the future looking like for them in the short term? Are we seeing maybe Pep leave? I know they've got a couple of injury problems, but Laporte. What are we thinking about City here?
I don't know. I think the one thing we talked about with City, you know, even in the midst of all of their dominance, has been how suspect their defense has been.
Right.
And in this match, I mean, United were on the front foot. I mean, you got to give credit where credit is due. You look at the spark that Bruno Fernandes has brought to this club as a former Spurs target. It really bums me out. I wish I could be more eloquent than that, but It's just really tough seeing a absolutely creative, no offense to Giovanni Lo Celso, I wish I had them both, creative box-to-box midfielder really making chances. And then that final goal just really sums it up, just to ice the game. An absolute howler by Ederson. I mean, not his best day. I mean, he gets beat near post on an albeit very creative free kick setup by Bruno Fernandes. I like to think that he recognized a one-on-one matchup with Anthony Martial and Sergio Aguero. And if Sergio Aguero is responsible for your defense in the box, well, you're going to allow goals. So I think maybe we're starting to see, you know, a little bit of kind of breakdown, and frankly, how hard it is to perform at such a high level for this many of years in the Premiership. Now, is that, well, Fernandinho, okay, you have Otamendi and Zinchenko on the other side. I mean, just no. just not a good defense. And so when it comes to Pep leaving, I mean, you know, I believe he's always, you know, finished out his contracts. It's kind of his deal. So I think the question is going to be, he has one more year, right? I think he signed through the end of the 2021 season. I think he stays, but I don't think he comes back after that. So I think what's really going to be telling is this next transfer window, if he is active in kind of plugging in those pieces. You know, you have some Phil Foden started this match, much to the delight of, you know, City faithful. you know, you still have, I mean, this is still a remarkably talented team. And the way we've been dogging United this season, there's absolutely no excuse for not beating this team at least once. and making me look like another goddamn liar if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to finish in the Champions League and remain manager of Manchester United, my head's going to explode. So for those things, I'm personally angry at Pep Guardiola for allowing this to happen and allowing Harry Maguire any element of happiness. But I think this next transfer window is really going to be telling if Pep's just kind of set them up for his swan song in English football, and then he'll either leave or he'll come on over to N17 and kind of pick up the wreckage after a season where Harry Kane is the player manager next year, and come in and guide us to fame and glory.
The quadruple, yeah. Boys, another lucky win for United here, or was it a better organization for Ole? Are you going to give United a shred of hope here in the sense of getting maybe top four, or what do we think in general here?
Oh, man, so many questions. I definitely think that United have a puncher's chance at a top four finish this year. You know, but the reality for them has been not necessarily against the top-level teams. It's been against the lower teams. I mean, they tend to have the same problem that Chelsea does, that where a team sets back and kind of allows them possession of the ball, they're sort of profligate in front of goal. You know, you go back and you look at the stats in this match. They had 12 shots and 6 on goal. City had 7 shots and 4 on goal, but City had 72% possession. And you leaving United with only 28%. And there's no question whatsoever that Bruno Fernandes is basically single-handedly leading United's charge into the top four with 9 matches left to go in this campaign. But it's not because of any strategic dominance on the part of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. You know, I guess you have to give credit where credit's due. The manager takes the blame when the losses happen and has to, anyway, he gets to accept the laudits and the applause when teams win. But I didn't necessarily look at this match and think that it was much of a tactical masterclass. United had a moment of brilliance followed up by Ederson with a howler. He just looks lost. You know, we talked about it a little bit last week on the pod that it's really hard for teams in the position of Liverpool within the context of the Premier League who have absolutely nothing to fight for because they've already won the league. And City now, who have no shot at winning the league, but will absolutely make the Champions League in the event that they don't have a ban next year. And I think that's the really interesting thing, is Jared kind of referenced City's transfer business over the summer. I think it remains to be seen. It's quite a fair bit different in the event that they don't have access to Europe next year.
Yeah.
You know, Pep might stay and see out his contract, but he's going to be navigating a sinking ship that's not really going to be anywhere near to even this year. But as far as United,
there's still an FA Cup investigation too that could result in transfer bans, I suppose,
or potentially even lost points. It's almost impossible to determine what direction the Premier League season is going to go. I don't know if you guys saw, Serie A has canceled all matches until April 3rd. So
that wild, man.
We're in the middle of this podcast right now, but who knows how much longer the Premier League is actually going to be going forward, whether or not they're going to be playing matches behind closed doors. And all of that is to say that at least as of right now, United are in fifth. And, you know, you don't really know whether or not fifth might be enough for a Champions League spot. You know, Wolves drew at home this weekend to Brighton. That's a really bad draw. Chelsea, who we're going to talk about a little bit later, are 3 points up in the top four. But at some point, you know, with the Euros over the summer, if they cancel the EPL for the rest of the year and just, you know, the rest of the matches are done, if City aren't able to compete in Europe next year, United are already in. And, you know, you kind of have to look at it from their general perspective. You know, I'm actually kind of happy that they still have retained Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I still don't think that he has what it takes in order to be able to manage at a top flight level. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens against Spurs away on the weekend. We've spared Jared the burden of having to speak about that match this weekend, but it'll be really interesting to see,
match.
Yeah. Well, you'll see the Mourinho masterclass against Manchester United, where they sit back at home and counterattack, and they'll act like a lower table team.
We don't have a choice. Counterattack with what?
But regardless,
oh my God, I think there's a, you know, there's maybe a goat that's outside. We could have him run around and hopefully he's not offside. But we don't have it. That's born out of necessity and personnel more so than a Mourinho masterclass, I submit.
But I will say this, the last match against the top four, or the normal top four, the top six you want to look at, is for United, is Sunday against Spurs. And then they don't play a match in the top against the team in the top six again until Leicester away on the final match day of the campaign. You know, in between that, they have Norwich away, Brighton away, Bournemouth at home, Villa away, Southampton at home, Palace away, West Ham at home. I mean, if you're looking for an inside track to the top four,
that's it. They got it.
That's it. You know what I mean?
Let's go ahead and move on then. Boyce, we're over to you next. We've got Chelsea score 4 and Liverpool limp over the line. Which one would you like?
Don't sleep on Norwich, by the way. They're really good.
I hear they take excellent penalties.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
I don't know. You know, I don't really want to talk about either of those matches, especially Liverpool, because it's super boring. But let's talk about Chelsea instead, I suppose.
Let's do Chelsea. They put together a convincing performance against a surprisingly poor Everton side on Sunday. Final score was 4-2. Okay, boys, here's your quiz question. When was the last time Chelsea scored 4 goals in a single Premier League match? Was it October 2019 or April 2019?
October 2019? Wasn't... Yeah.
It was, yeah. Although I like that second guessing. I almost got you there. It was more recent than you thought. It was against Burnley. Chelsea won that one 4-2. So they've got the capabilities to score those goals there. But in this particular match, was it a case of Chelsea being good or Everton being bad?
Everton were terrible. Mm-hmm. Chelsea are trotting out a lineup right now that looks a lot like Arsenal's lineup for the last 3 or 4 years of the Wenger era, with Giroud up front and Willian and Pedro on the wings. I mean, Willian is a high-quality player. He's had a pretty excellent campaign for a player that's nearing kind of the end of his career. They played Gilmore, Mount, and Barkley in the midfield. I mean, that's not, on paper, that is not an excellent team. And that first Mason, the first goal that Mason Mount scored was actually very beautiful. He did it on the quick turn, near post. You can make noise as to whether or not Jordan Pickford should have gotten there. He definitely fainted a little bit to the far post and then just didn't have enough speed and athleticism in order to be able to get down on the near post and stop the shot. Who knows? You know, one of the higher quality keepers in the EPL potentially might get to that in a way that Pickford does not. But for the rest of the match, Everton just gave up.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're looking at a front three of Bernard, Richarlison, Calvert-Lewin, Gylfi Sigurdsson was in the match, Andre Gomez is back. You know, they subbed in Moise Keane, the ever-present Theo Walcott, and Anthony Gordon. They just couldn't do anything. Mm. And, again, I mean, we talked about the front six for Chelsea, but the back four, I mean, Digne, Holgate, Keane, and Sidibe for Everton, you know, you would expect them to do a little bit more in the air. And then for Chelsea, again, you're talking about Alonso, Zuma, Rudiger, and Azpilicueta. That's not like an incredibly defensive back four. And Everton just couldn't do anything against them. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get any offensive momentum or progress. They really didn't seem to do anything with the match. And even though it was 60-40 in terms of possession, Everton had 3 shots on goal with only 1 on target in 90 minutes.
And it's kind of surprising too, because I think we even talked about it last week, that Everton had this such great momentum going into it, having, you know, Carlo Ancelotti at the helm. So maybe it was just a bad day at the office. Gio, what are your thoughts? Do you think Everton just had one of those days, or were Chelsea just supremely good this week?
I think it's just one of those days. I mean, I think maybe I've come around and maybe become a believer in this Everton squad. I don't know. But I think it's just one of those days. And, you know, that's halfway not wanting to give credit to Chelsea. And if you're a member of CIA who comes to strange days, stop. But you look... You look at Everton kind of going, you know, going forward. The next two matches, I mean, Chelsea and Liverpool were matches that they could maybe afford to lose. And then with Norwich, Spurs, God, we're so bad. And then, you know, they play between Southampton, Villa, and Bournemouth and Norwich, you have four, you know, out of the last nine that are matches that they can snag points. And Everton's goal is always, you know, finish top table. I don't think anyone was ever realistic about them finishing top four. Sure. But, you know, before Ancelotti came in, and we were talking about this team, you know, possibly being relegated. Right. How the history of that, of Everton going down would be just, frankly, bad for the league. I mean, a Merseyside derby that's not in the Prem, I don't want to see it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, solidly in 12th. They're going to stay up, and it's going to see if they can snag some results here. But, you know, if they were going to challenge for top four, we were talking about those points kind of being cannibalized here. And, you know, right now, you know, 11 points separate them. I mean, but that could have been five, right? You have a six point swing the other way. Everton are on 40 points. They would be in 10th right behind Arsenal on goals. Mm. So. But one of the things that they're really carrying on from this Ancelotti, you know, from this era coming in, is they made such good progress on their goal difference. And I will say this did not help. It knocks them back down to -9, which is something that they were carrying, right, you know, before Ancelotti came in. But you know, they got players coming back from injury, and I think the future is bright.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's going to be interesting to see how Everton, or what Everton do in the transfer window this season this summer coming up, because you know, I have theories that Ancelotti might have some ideas there, but the question is, will he have the money? Jared, where it's you, bud. So we have the last topic, which is Liverpool limp over the line. Despite looking sluggish on Saturday, Liverpool come out 2-1 winners over Bournemouth and set a new home record. Okay, Jared, here's your quiz question. How many Premier League games have Liverpool now won in a row at home? Is it 22 or 26?
22.
He knew the answer. Yes, that is absolutely correct. And it'll get you those 2 points. Nice work on that. So, obviously, yes, very impressive record. They're doing great, blah, blah, blah. But over the last...
Who cares?
Yeah, true. But over the last few games, they've kind of started to look a little ordinary. I mean, they got knocked out of the FA Cup. They had the shock loss last week. So what's the deal? Are they? Is it literally just the case that, you know, they've already got it wrapped up? They're just kind of second gearing it?
I think this is different than Manchester City, who simply have a talent problem on defense. I think Liverpool are suffering from a focus problem on defense. You look at that first goal from Bournemouth. You know, Cherries, they had chances in this match. They were in this match. And it was tremendously frustrating to see them not put it away. I think it was King who had the ball all alone at the spot and then trips over it in the 90th minute. Just come on. You know, James Milner goes back and kind of saves the day on a pretty acrobatic and impressive save off the line. A couple of those things go the other way, and those are the chances that Watford were able to exploit, right? And if you're going to win those matches, you got to put away any chance you get against a team of this caliber. The difference is they're suddenly affording a lot of chances. And now you have a defense that, you know, was that appeared to be airtight, starting to show some cracks, starting to show some vulnerability here. Obviously, there's plenty of potent firepower. I mean, Cherries didn't do themselves any favors. Both goals came off of, you know, really poor dispossessions in the defensive half, not taking care of the ball. And just with that potent front three, you can't give them chances. They will put them away. Sure. I'm still confused as to how Salah actually put that shot away with their first goal. But, you know, I think it's probably a lack of focus with this team, which, I mean, it's not necessarily, you know, an indictment. We talked about this. We talked about what it takes to perform at that high of a level for this long, because we have to go back and realize this hasn't been a performance that began in August, right? This is a performance that began over a year ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, to go that long perform at that high a level, I mean, it's tough. But as a non-Liverpool supporter, you're heartened by the cracks, mm-hmm. right? As much champagne as, you know, Boyce and, you know, the Invincibles want to drink when it comes to this. I mean, the reality is we want it to be competitive. Mm-hmm. And even though they're going to wrap it up, you know, they're going to wrap it up in, what, 2-3 weeks probably. Going forward, I'm interested to see if we do see a little bit of a shuffle in this squad, and you know, maybe I do not see them continuing this type of form into next year.
Yeah, I think the question from that would be, can Liverpool retain the title next year? Boyce, why don't we start with that?
I mean, I think it's infinitely possible. You've seen links to Timo Werner over the last few weeks starting to develop. You know, you wonder whether or not Liverpool would be willing to sell Sadio Mane or potentially even Mo Salah and start looking for a younger long-term replacement and profit off of, you know, a known commodity and talent like they've done before, an infinite number of times. I mean, I think if you're Liverpool and you're trying to regenerate next year and maintain the momentum that you developed over the last two campaigns, even though, you know, you didn't win last year by, I believe, like a single point or two, you know, they still had an outrageous points total. I believe it's the largest points total in Premier League history that was insufficient to actually win the title.
That's true.
I think there's plenty of opportunities for them to not necessarily upgrade their roster, but to certainly regenerate their roster and get a little bit younger. You know, I mean, there are going to be suitors for, you know, Mane, Firmino, or Salah, kind of depending on what you want to do. I think if you're Liverpool, you potentially evaluate which one of those component pieces you're most willing to let go, and then you use that money to capitalize a purchase of Timo Werner. And then you're right back where you were before. Liverpool could probably use another player, another dynamic midfielder, probably of the box-to-box variety. Jordan Henderson's been pretty decent, but I think you could upgrade on that position. And, you know, to Jared's point, and like we said, we discussed it last week, I just think it's impossible to be able to maintain that level of performance over a year or longer period. And they've really done well to maintain it to this point. But you look at the fact that they probably, potentially, absent Lucas Fabianski falling all over himself, they could have drawn or lost that match to West Ham. There were infinite opportunities in this match against Bournemouth for them to lose, and they were playing it at Anfield. And I think that the reality here is we're going to see what the true Liverpool team looks like on Wednesday against Atletico Madrid, because they're down a goal. They don't have an away goal. And if Letty somehow managed to sneak in a Diego Costa goal in the first 25 minutes, it puts Liverpool in an exceedingly dangerous position where they've got to score three goals in order to be able to win against an Atleti defense that really hasn't allowed that many goals. And you're talking about a situation where, again, another thing that we've talked about on this podcast multiple times is Jurgen Klopp's disdain for the domestic cups. I don't think he cares at all that they lost to Chelsea. They put out a half-decent squad that I was kind of impressed with, because generally he just doesn't look at that as an opportunity to do much of anything. But they're going to lose the potential to be invincible, drop out of the FA Cup, and then there's a half-decent opportunity. Again, all Atleti need to do on Wednesday is score a goal, and Liverpool could go out in the round of 16. And you start to look at a season that doesn't look quite as lustrous as it once did in the event that that happens.
And that's interesting too. I think, yeah, you know, his disdain for the FA Cup, like you suggested, and just kind of the general mentality of Liverpool, oh, we got the Premier League, that's enough. And it's just kind of like, should that be enough though? Right, let's go ahead and move on to another round of Rumour Mill. As usual, I'm going to provide a line or quote from a newspaper or online resource. All the guys have to do is tell me if it was actually printed or something that was completely made up. 2 points for a correct guess, and Boyce is up first with this one. Arsenal could offer England defender John Stones a way out of Manchester City at the end of the season.
Oh, man. Well, that was certainly something that was discussed during the winter transfer window with rumors that City had no interest in it. But I would assume that they're just going to reprint that. So true?
It is true, yeah. According to 90 Minutes, that delightful read, John Stones is looking for a way out. Do you think that's a good move for Arsenal, or all parties, I should say?
I don't really know. I mean, to Jared's point earlier, you're looking at a Man City defense that he can't seem to get in, even though Nicolas Otamendi is getting starts. And that's not exactly a ringing endorsement for a British footballer. He had moments over the previous 2 to 3 years where he looked pretty serviceable. But again, he got into the England lineup in a way that, you know, Rob Holding never did. But I don't actually think he's that much better of a central defender. And City aren't going to sell him for cheap. He's British. That always adds a little bit of a tax. It's just not worth it. I'd go raid La Liga or the Bundesliga or something like that, and you get far better value for the same money that you would spend for John Stones.
Interesting. Okay, we'll see what happens. Jared, this next one's for you. Tottenham striker Harry Kane is not planning on signing a new deal at Tottenham.
This is where your wording becomes interesting, James.
too many negatives. He's not planning to.
I know that there were reports that he's keen to take his, you know, take his talents to South Beach. I don't know if he's gone so far as to say that he's not going to sign a new deal. So, but I know it was in the Sun, so hell, anything's possible. True.
It is true, yeah, and I was going to say I could give you a bonus point. The Sun wrote that delightful read on Harry Kane. I think we've discussed it maybe a little bit off the mic here, but there are rumours now obviously circulating that Harry Kane is officially looking for a move. I think we discussed Manchester United would be potentially lined up for him, maybe for like £100 and something million. Thoughts on Harry Kane moving forward, Jared? What do you think?
Oh man, I mean, look, I know Boyce is going to chime in and talk about how good we are without him, but the fact of the matter is the guy is a world-class striker and you are better with him on your team.
He's so disintegrating. If you guys could get £150 million for him, you take that, and I would be jealous.
So here's the thing. I don't disagree with you. Like that, it, from a business perspective, yes, sure, fine. The problem I have with it is that it backdoors this glory for Daniel Levy. Like all this was on purpose. That's the problem I have with it, is that all this means is that we have another round of bail money where Levy will have another young manager come in after Mourinho, or he will choke with the purse strings and will maybe get close, and then it'll all fall down again. That's the problem that I have. The reason that he's leaving isn't so we can actually capitalize and make money off of him. He's 26. If we wanted to do that, we would have done it 2 years ago. But the fact that Kane is being put this decision because he has Euros coming up, because he's a world-class striker, and saying, you know what? No, I'm going to leave. The fact that this is going to be spun as Levy being the brilliant businessman that he is and turning, you know, water into wine when it comes to Harry Kane is laughable. The motivations aren't correct, and I hate the fact that he's going to be rewarded for it with this classic mismanagement of talent.
Yeah, that's very well put, Jared, I must say, because I'm kind of on the fence myself, not getting too much into it, but I think the money would be nice, but I think we saw what he did with the bail money, and yes, Eriksen was good, Lamela, great, but of those seven, only Lamela's left. And so you kind of have to say to yourself, what have we achieved from that bail money? Anyway,
you will have paid Jose Mourinho's buyout on his managerial contract.
Oh, that's no. What I'm saying. Like of these things.
Don't put it like that. It makes it sound worse. Anyway, let's move on. Boyce, this next one is for you. Chelsea's Brazilian forward Willian is set to reject a new contract and could be interested in a summer switch to rivals Tottenham.
That is false, because I don't think they're offering him a contract, and the rumors were to Arsenal.
It's true, according to Brazil. I haven't made this up, I swear. Brazilian online resource UOL. Please Google it just to prove I'm not lying.
What's Portuguese for sun?
Yeah, look that up. I couldn't believe it when I found this read. I was like, it has to be a bunch of baloney, I don't know what you want to call it, because Willian seems to be actually improving a little bit at Chelsea, so why would he, I don't know, maybe
how
it's money talks.
He?
He's got to be 30s now.
He's like 30, 31.
No, he's got to be, he's even older than that, isn't he?
I don't know, man, we're talking about football. No, I didn't, it broke
he's
my heart when
30,
I was Wayne Rooney, same age.
Yeah.
He's 31 until August 9th of 1988, and then I believe he would then be 32.
Okay, wow, so he is getting on a bit, so maybe Tottenham would be a good way for him to retire.
Look at that boy cipher. Yeah, nice ad.
Let's go ahead and play another round of our favourite, of course. It is player profile. I'm going to provide 5 different clues to a Premier League player, each clue easier than the last. First person to shout their name and correctly guess said player wins those points, but you only get one guess, as an incorrect shot will freeze you out. This week, the category for these players is height disadvantage. I did weight last week, I'm doing height this week. This translates to players who are currently below 5'8" in height. But they're still on the field, so they're obviously killing it. All right, here we go. Player number one is a Scottish international.
Boyce.
Yes, Boyce.
Ryan Fraser.
Damn, yes it is. Nice work. How'd you get that one? That was awesome.
He was legitimately the first person that came to mind when you introduced this category, and I was like, yes!
Ryan Fraser, yeah. The other clue is register 14 assists last season, has been with his club since 2016. That club is Bournemouth. First name is Ryan. Ryan Fraser, nice work. All right, player number two joined his current club in 2018. Plays for a London club.
Jared.
Yes, Jared.
Lucas Torreira.
It is! Nice work, Lucas Torreira. I think that's the second Arsenal player you've stolen from Boyce in a player profile.
So, and Boyce knows this, is that I'm actually keen on that dude. Like, there's kind of a similar setup here where he really wasn't really feel like he was adjusting to, like, life in the Premiership and life in England and stuff like that, which, if we remember, is similar to what Son had. Mm. And I thank Mauricio Pochettino for kind of turning that around, but I don't know how really Boyce feels about Torreira, but I think he could be a special player.
I love him. It's just frustrating that Mike Dean oversaw the fourth leg break related incident with Arsenal in the game against Pompey, and of course did nothing again. It's amazing how that always works when that little brat is in charge of the match.
Anyway, the other clues on this one were...
I think he's fine.
Yeah, the other clues on this one were... is from Uruguay, and first name is Lucas. So nice work, Jared. All right, player number three was born in Ghana.
Boyce.
Yes, Boyce.
Are Jared and I just doing this? Is it Sadio Mane?
No, it's not Sadio Mane. No, Boyce, that freezes you out. Jared, these last clues are for you. Plays as a midfielder, has been with his club since 2017... that club is Newcastle, and his first name is Christian. This is a tough one, unless you're a Newcastle fan.
I don't know this. I don't know this.
No? All right. Well, the answer
Christian
is...
Christian Eriksen.
It's... Oh, yeah. Almost. Yeah, Christian Eriksen was born in Ghana. No, the answer is Christian Atsu. Christian Atsu, who is...
sure, why not?
Why not? Is 5'5", which, by the way, I didn't tell the height of the other guys. Ryan Fraser is 5'4". 5'4". And Lucas Torreira is 5'6". So there you go. Just catch that up there. All right. Player number four is a French international. Is a midfielder, once played for Leicester City, now
Jared.
Yes, Jared.
Mendy.
It is not Mendy, no, and that just frees you out. It's unlucky. These last clues are for you then, boy. So now plays for Chelsea. First name is N'Golo.
I had myself on mute. That was ridiculous. It's N'Golo Kanté.
Oh, wow. Strategery, and it worked.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I knew Jared was going to blow it anyway. It's fine.
Whoa.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. I'll tell you the scores right now. We're tied with 8 each. This last player will officially determine the winner, although I was really anxious to get back to tiebreakers again. But anyway. So this last player is 28 years of age. Has only made 6 club appearances in the EPL this season. A Swiss international.
Jared.
Yes, Jared.
Shaqiri.
It is! Zidane Shaqiri is absolutely correct, and it'll get you those 2 points, and not only that, it officially seals the win for you again this episode. How are you feeling, Jared? Nice work.
Oh, man. God, I just... Sorry, disappoint Boyce, I'm blowing it. Did I blow it? Did I blow it, Boyce?
I think we're actually even now.
Oh, did I do the math wrong?
No. Not in this match.
Oh,
I think for the season. I believe we are even in the overall tally as well. I think so.
Oh, man. I might have to double check that, but yeah.
With Arsenal and Spurs in consecutive places, how apropos.
Yeah, but we're still both mid-table, which feels pretty much right.
Yeah, well, you know.
All right,
we're
Jared.
Not getting in
fights with other podcasts about names and setups. So we're doing a good job. I don't know if you guys saw that stuff with Lads is going
through.
Yeah,
quick shout out to them because that is a mess. Good God. Who would have thought? Those Brits, can't trust them. Anyway, Jared, real quick on Spurs. Obviously, doom and gloom. We didn't obviously talk about them much this episode round, but Champions
fine.
League and Manchester United. There's got to be a lot at the tunnel soon, hasn't there?
No, I don't know. Is there? I mean, you know, we're all dust, James. To dust we shall return.
There you go.
It's just, you got to learn, right? I mean, we're riding high off of, you know, whenever Kane went down, we were able to rely on Heung-Min Son, and then as a supporter, you know, Lucas Moura. Tanguy Ndombele hasn't, you know, really performed at the level that we, you know, expected him to perform. I'm heartened by Gio Lo Celso. That kid is the future, man. I really enjoy watching him play. But not to sound like a broken record, but it's going to come down to transfers. And while there's a, you know, having the money would be beneficial, you know, buy your Kane kits now because, you know, every day goes on. I think this might actually be something that could materialize.
Yeah.
But right now, I'm not betting the bank on it.
Interesting. Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see. Boys, Arsenal's fortune seem perhaps a little bit better, getting the win over West Ham, thankfully. But facing Manchester City on Wednesday, like we teased, could be an interesting run-in for them, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal have an array of difficult fixtures in the last 10. They've got City away, Liverpool at home, Wolves away, Leicester at home. You know, there's some fearsome matches in there as compared to the United matches. But, you know, the reality is that United have actually been worse against the lower end of the table. And if we take the Wayback Machine to 2018, 2019, I believe we all remember that United had a gilded chance to be able to finish in the top four by playing two of the teams that were in the bottom four, I think, of the division towards the end of the year, and they lost both of them. So, you know, let's not mint their top four prize quite yet, but you know, as an Arsenal fan, Wednesday, it's not necessarily do or die, but you get the feeling that if Arsenal could even scavenge a point out of that match and then go to Brighton on the weekend on Saturday and win, that top four might not necessarily be a reality, but at least it remains a possibility. I think if you get, you know, if they get curb stomped on Wednesday by City and then they go to Brighton and only get a point, you can just ride off the rest of the season. Although with the way that Spurs are going, Arsenal might still finish ahead of them through some, I don't even know, black magic. Spurs can't stop losing. Arsenal can't stop being pretty terrible. I you know, the reality is the benefit that Spurs have over Arsenal in the summer transfer window is that they just have more readily saleable assets. I mean, again, if you could get £120 million for a central forward who has missed extended periods over the last two seasons, has been run absolutely into the ground, and whose body shows absolutely no sign of being able to keep up with the pace of the Premier League schedule over the course of a season, and you can sell him to United, where he will then be making obscene amounts of money and doing the exact same thing, thereby potentially displacing Rashford or Martial or other players that I'm infinitely more scared of this year than Harry Kane from the spot. I think you do it, and Spurs could potentially be good. I think Spurs' problem is that they've just got a ton of stadium debt, and it looks very unlikely that they're going to finish in the top four. And you combine the two of those things together, along with Daniel Levy and a potential buyout for Jose Mourinho, and you start to see portions of any money that they could obtain for Harry Kane kind of being squandered almost immediately. You know, you look at the money that they got for Christian Eriksen, that basically pays Jose Mourinho's salary this year.
Yeah, yeah, too true. Well, chaos in North London. Let's see how long it lasts. That's the only thing I can think of. All right, guys. Well, that does conclude
today. Buckle up.
But yeah, buckle up indeed. Yeah, well, that does conclude today's episode. Thanks again to my guests, Jared Bustamante and Boyce Richardson. As always, don't forget to check out our social media avenues, Kick Corner Flag on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And of course, do subscribe to our weekly shows from your favorite podcast platform. Thanks so much for listening, guys. And until next time.